This morning, we're going to talk about one of the initiatives of the partnership between the American College of Surgeons and the United States military. And one of those initiatives has to do with readiness. How do you prepare a surgeon to be deployed? And how do you assure that that surgeon is ready to go? And this has implications not only for the military, but certainly for those of us on the civilian side, because we actually don't measure people's skills. We don't assure that they continually have skills that are important. So this has a lot of implications for the civilian practice as well. So we're going to start out by hearing from Dr. Eric Elster, that many of you probably know. He's a transplant surgeon. He's the chair of the Department of Surgery at the Uniformed Services University and Walter Reed National Medical Center. And he's going to begin to talk about what we call the KSA project, which again will describe how we got to this point and where we're going. So Dr. Elster.
Good morning, and thank you for coming early after what could have been a late night, either at the Red Sox game or at any of the events last night. So thank you. Thank you, Peggy, for that kind introduction. I want to talk about, you know, our KSA project, Knowledge, Skills, and Abilities, and how, you know, we plan on maintaining currency and competency, not just for the surgeons, although we are the center of the universe, but for the entire combat casualty care team. So just as a background, you know, as the KSA project was started to address the potential loss of critical skills after conflict. Some of you have seen this slide, which shows basically after every conflict, we get really good in taking care of patients that are injured by combat, but we lose that knowledge and have to regain it. And I'll tell you, we cannot afford to repeat those errors of the past for many reasons. Number one, it's not the right thing to do. Number two, the world we live in is too kinetic, so we can't do that. And prior to this initiative, there was no consistent measure to measure physicians' clinical readiness for deployment. There were fragmented approaches, skills courses, textbooks, but it was never put together. And this community, the community of surgeons, in partnership with the American College of Surgeons, really recognized this. Several of key players who were in the room helped develop this project, which has now taken on a life of its own. And it's really focused on these KSAs. And these are the knowledge, skills, and abilities, or the critical knowledge, skills, and abilities developed by the communities to gauge deployment readiness. So what principles and goals are we looking for? Well, in the context of an expert trauma system, the joint trauma system, we're looking for a combat casualty care team, general surgeons, trauma surgeons, critical care, emergency medicine, anesthesia, orthopedic surgery, nurses, corpsmen, techs, that can perform damage control surgery and damage control resuscitation with assessed proficiency. What we call what happens at the roll twos and then above. That in that system, we have trauma surgeons at key locations and key positions. Those that possess the knowledge and clinical judgment to lead that system in that deployed environment, that they're in key places and key leadership positions running organizations like the JTS and informing the combatant commanders, those line officers that run the battlefield. That we have definitive and specialty care at role threes and fours. For those of you, a role two is a forward surgical team, a role three is a combat hospital, a role four is a hospital outside of theater, like Launchville Medical Regional Medical Center or Walter Reed or San Antonio. That all of our people have a robust practice with the highest quality care. For those of you that have been following military medicine and military surgery, you know that currently, the robust practice currently isn't the case for everyone. We need to make sure that happens. The highest quality care is the case, and I'll show that to you. And essentially, readiness is at the core of our system. The military health system is unique in that it's split. It has a direct care system, hospitals like any other healthcare system. It has an insurance plan, but it also has a deployment mission. So to set the stage, at the core of this combat casualty care team are these general surgeons that deploy far forward to perform that damage control surgery and damage control resuscitation. And there's been a heated debate within our community whether general surgeons can do this, and can they do this effectively? Some folks have said they can't do it at all. Other folks have said they don't need any training, they're ready right now. The answer is obviously somewhere in the middle. And I'll show you over the next few slides that in the context of an expert system, where expectations are set, there's training, and we have leaders driving that system, that those general surgeons can function. So I'll show you a slide that shows that there's no significant differences in the management outcomes of complex hepatobiliary cases between general and trauma surgeons with the system. That really those system effects outweigh any potential benefits of an individual in the care of patients. One of the questions that always comes up, or one of the solution sets that's delivered, is we should put all of our people in the busiest level one trauma centers. Well, I think we definitely should put teams in those busiest level one trauma centers. We have to ensure that our trauma surgeons are practicing the robust practice of trauma surgery, but that alone isn't enough. If we were to fill those trauma centers, we would still have another 300, 400 surgeons and team members beyond them that would need a place to work. And I'll show you that both emergent and elective general surgery play a major role in providing transferable skills for the deployed environment. So here's a paper that looked at those hepatobiliary injury cases and showed essentially there was no significant difference when taking care of these patients when you had a general surgeon as opposed to a trauma surgeon, again, in the context of a system. And really, one of the key drivers in this paper was the use of damage control surgery. Civilian trauma partnerships alone can't solve the problem. Again, civilian trauma partnerships are critical for us being successful. But if you looked at, and this is from Bill Schwab's paper, called The Winds of War, if you look at the busiest trauma centers in this country, those that have more than 2,500 admissions and 175 gunshot wounds, and we put three surgeons at each of those, and I'm just gonna focus on the surgeons for a second, that's 100 people. Well, we have 440 general surgeons in the military system. We probably need about 600. So that alone isn't the answer. The answer is partnerships, make sure the military hospitals are busy taking care of sick patients, local partnerships beyond level one trauma centers, level two trauma centers, level three centers, ensuring folks have that robust elective emergent general surgery practice, you know, an all-in approach that makes sure that every single one of our surgeons is operating at an efficient level and effective level. And this is a nice study that showed essentially looking at novice surgeons versus experienced surgeons in a system that an organized trauma program and appropriate clinical oversight mitigate individual surgeon experience. That's a testament to the work of the college in developing trauma systems, in that you can basically build an expert system where every person has a level of baseline proficiency. So in order to address our mission of being able to deploy far forward and do critical surgery and care, we developed this clinical readiness program. And around this clinical readiness lifecycle, which is a structured readiness program that is essentially the individual foundation of that system that I just described. And this really is a chair with four legs. The first leg is a periodic knowledge assessment. The foundation of competency is knowledge. So essentially, we're building a curriculum, and I'll show you the knowledge assessment in a second. We're building a curriculum that we'll talk about a little bit later with a test that measures whether the folks know the requisite knowledge to be successful. That knowledge is based on clinical practice guidelines, case registries, and the literature that's been developed over the last 15 years. So that's step one. Step two is maintaining your clinical KSAs, having that robust practice so that you're ready. All the tests and simulations in the world won't work unless folks have a practice that is reasonable and has transferable skills. I'll get to that in a minute. Skills assessment. Even with knowledge, a baseline of knowledge that's robustly assessed, a practice that seems reasonable, there are gap skills we will expect our teams to do that aren't done frequently within regular hospitals. General surgeons doing decompressive cranies is an example. For lower extremity fasciotomies just don't happen frequently enough to ensure that, you know, 400 or 500 folks are ready to do it all the time. That's where simulation and skills come into play. What's unique here, and Travis Polk will talk about it, is not only in the past we focused on demonstrating skills, now we can measure the effectiveness of, you know, of and assess the effectiveness of those folks performing those skills. And only after that are you essentially deployment ready. Behind all this is the ability to remediate or train or retrain someone. If someone has a knowledge deficit, how do we deal with it? If someone has a skills deficit, how do we deal with it? If someone's practice isn't robust enough, how do we deal with that? And this has become the center of our enterprise. Just a comment about the military health system, it's a behemoth. The military health system has a budget of $50 billion. We have 9.5 million beneficiaries across the planet. We provide care, we provide the entire range of care in a system where there are no co-pays, where everything's taken care of. We, as I mentioned before, we have our own hospitals, we have an insurance plan, and we have this deployment mission. And what this effort has really done, and I'll show you, is changed the focus from that routine care to our core mission of readiness. Not forgetting that routine care, not diminishing its importance, but really making sure that we're focused on our critical mission. So what's the current state of military knowledge and skills assessment? Well, right now, until we started this project, there was limited awareness of the system or those clinical practice guidelines. We have many folks that go downrange that when you ask, did you review the CPGs? They're like, what are those? Where do I find them? We have skills courses, some of which, and they're actually very good. Asset Adam formed the foundation of our emergency war surgery course, but there's intermittent clinician participation. Many folks go downrange and they've never even heard of those skills. There's no established skills assessment instrument. Most of the skills courses are demonstration of skills. We still don't know if that person can adequately perform that fasciotomy. And really, there's no pathway to process or curb poor performance to remediate folks. So with this KSA-driven approach, there's assessment of knowledge coupled to our ABS-MOC. There's skills-driven courses with assessment built in and the ability to train and retrain. So the knowledge assessment, you know, the foundation is, of course, knowledge. And about 40 of us have spent the last year developing a question bank of approximately 600 questions. Matt Ritter's going to go over the process in a little bit. To deliver a 200-question examination. We're in our second round of beta testing of this. We've given it to 10 surgeons. Now, currently, about 40 to 50 surgeons are taking it with the ability to go fully operational with this in about 2.5 months. For this, we've used standard tools to basically build our questions and to deliver the questions. We're actually using the same platform that's used for the ABSITE exam, the ITS platform. The reason why we chose that is we know that actually passes through the military firewalls. Skills assessment. A group with Dr. Polk's on, with Dr. Boyer and many others, they're working on skills assessment. And as I mentioned before, we have some pretty good courses, but we haven't had the ability to basically assess your proficiency in performing those skills. And if you think of the world of simulation, it's somewhere between live tissue, which is going away, and virtual reality. An immersive environment where you can do this in virtual reality. The virtual reality piece, I'm not a prognosticator, but it's not here in time for us to use it now. So what we're left with are models that replicate tissue, as you can see in these pictures, and then the perfused cadavers that Dr. Polk will talk about, which perhaps, you know, pack a tremendous trauma experience into a short, accessible session. And then finally, the practice piece. And if you look at our system, our current system was economically based. The military health system had an emphasis on RV production, MGMAs, just like any other civilian system. Well, that doesn't make very much sense because we actually don't generate revenue in any meaningful way. What that's done, because we manage a, a direct care system and a insurance plan, is it's resulted in caseloads decreasing. The average general surgeon in the Army currently is doing about 75 to 100 cases. That's not sustainable. What happens after that? Our GME platforms become at risk. And then, of course, we don't really capture our workload as efficiently as we could because there's really no incentive to do that. With this KSA metric, and we're actually using it for our process of managing our systems, all of our hospitals actually are coming together as opposed to being Army, Navy, Air Force facilities under one agency. We're going to use this metric to drive our system. We'll use it to recapture the high-value cases. You know, we can't do everything in our hospitals, so we probably shouldn't be doing tons of influenza vaccines on children or potentially, you know, low-value soft tissue cases, but we need to do those higher complex cases. We need something to measure that. And of course, if we start doing more in our system, if anyone knows anything about differential cost accounting, we'll show that your economics will improve, we'll take the pressure off our GME programs, and we'll really move to a system that's making sure that we're ready. So what is this KSA score that I mentioned before? Well, this is a tale of serendipity, and essentially, we developed these blueprints of KSAs, these lists of knowledge, skills, and abilities. I'll show you that in a minute. And we realized that we needed a way to basically measure routine practice. And sitting at Southern Surgical, Jeff Billy and myself ran into Charlie Mabry, who's sitting in the audience, who's on the AMA RUC committee. For those of you who don't know anything about that committee, go talk to Charlie afterwards. But essentially what they do is they manage the generation of RVUs, and they take every procedure, break it into pre, intra, and post-operative steps. They assign scores and weights to those steps. And we took all of these assessable KSAs and mapped them to those individual steps. And we developed a KSA score for every procedure that we do in routine care. So if you're taking out a gallbladder, you're doing a liver resection, a colon resection, we were able to extract the readiness value of those procedures. Once we had a score for procedures, then we developed thresholds and a tool to actually measure this in real time. So how do we develop these KSA scores? Well, first, we bring all the subject matter experts together to sit down and basically extract the knowledge, skills, and abilities from those clinical practice guidelines, the body of knowledge, and those case registries. This was first done in May of 16 at the headquarters of the American College of Surgeons. We sequestered the general surgery community upstairs there for about a week. And we went through this process. Then we surveyed the clinical community. We asked each surgeon, anesthesiologist, critical care provider to look at the frequency and importance of those individual skills in the deployed environment. That's important for two reasons. Educationally, it's important for assessment development, but it's really important for socialization. You're basically bringing folks on to the process. Then we map those peacetime workloads to those KSAs, as I mentioned. We calculate procedure scores, and we determine thresholds, and then we have a metric to measure our system. We've looked at this in comparison to civilian systems, where we are in our system, and I'll tell you right now, only about, and this is a little bit an older slide, we adjusted the methodology a bit, only about a quarter of our surgeons are ready per this metric. But when you compare this to busy trauma ACS services, the metric is clearly within the ballpark. And what does it mean at the individual level? Well, the way we do this is we have this score that takes into account volume, complexity, and diversity. The volume that we pegged the score at was the volume that happened in the expeditionary environment, kind of at the peak of the conflict. The diversity ensures that folks are practicing a broad breadth of surgery. You know, they're not just doing one thing. We really need folks that can operate across the full spectrum. So if you have someone who's doing thyroidectomies only, they may generate KSAs, but they won't have that diversity that we need. And then the acuity piece. As we were building this tool, we recognized that folks could do low acuity things and meet our metric, essentially scope their way to readiness, and we were able to adjust for that. So here are two surgeons. One surgeon who did 312 cases is below the threshold, and these are folks that are right below our threshold. But why is that? Because they did a ton of upper endoscopy. The other surgeon who did less procedures, 225, is above the metric. Why? Because they're doing a much broader breadth of surgery, and they're doing complex surgery as well. For us, that's a ready surgeon. So we've done this, again, not just for the general surgeons. We in surgery have really led the charge here. After we did the general, after we did the general surgeons, we replicated the process for the rest of the combat casualty care team. Orthopedic surgery, critical care, physicians and nurses, emergency medicine physicians and nurses, anesthesia physicians and CRNAs. And all told, we've developed about 4,000 of these KSAs organized in 63 distinct groupings. These become the engine for the life cycle that I mentioned earlier. We're actually managing our facilities to these KSAs, to the metric that I mentioned, in general and orthopedic surgery. We've been doing it for the past, essentially 6 months at Walter Reed, Fort Belvoir, Eglin, Travis, Pendleton, and Fort Bliss. When we started this, there was a lot of trepidation on behalf of our leadership. Were we gonna break the bank? Were we gonna increase costs, reduce access? And we've been able to launch this without doing any of that. And actually, even early on, we're starting to see an uptick in the KSAs, which is essentially the complexity of cases at three of our, four of our facilities. The most important thing, though, is we've done this while preserving quality. It's great to be busy and do cases and think we're ready, but unless we're measuring quality, we won't be. This data was presented by Peter Learn a couple days ago, and it's basically our participation in NISQIP. Through the partnership, we formed a consortium of our 45 MTA military hospitals that are participating in NISQIP, and what we've seen over the past couple years is a shift of our NISQIP quartiles to the left, getting better, and a reduction in variability by having an organized system which is based on the principles contained within the Red Book. This is a system-wide look at the military system versus the other participants in NISQIP. So our 45 hospitals in comparison to the other 650 hospitals in NISQIP. And you can see in green, our system is actually outperforming the civilian systems in most of the metrics with the exception of return to OR. We're very pleased with those results and we'll keep on pushing. So what have we seen from those hospitals that have been using this metric? Well, we've seen, we're learning to manage something that's important. We're learning how to recapture those critical cases, to work to ensure that our ORs are not the choke points, to help us give us ammunition when folks try to close our partnerships. For example, at one of our hospitals, they have a very robust partnership with the VA. The accountants come in and say, well, you're costing us money. We come back and say, no, we're generating readiness. And this really, is the backbone of our system to make sure we're ready. This slide basically puts all the pieces together and shows, we're managing, we have our metric, our KSA blueprints are updated on a three-year cycle. So we have a robust practice. We have that cognitive assessment with a curriculum that Joe Galante is developing with a team. If you're successful in passing that cognitive assessment, then you move to your skills assessment, either in your pre-deployment window or on a regular period. If you're successful, then you are a Tier 3 Expeditionary General Surgeon. You're interoperable between the services. So it doesn't matter if you're Army, Navy, Air Force, and then you're ready to deploy. Now, if your deployment mission is unique and you need additional skill sets, you need more trauma immersion because you're going to be on your own on a small surgical team, then each service can address that with a service-specific mission. And this has been an effort, this is really a story of change. It's a story of persistence, socialization, having the right timing, and having an approach that really is unassailable. And it's been done in a top-down and bottom-up fashion. As I mentioned before, our communities have developed this approach. We've been tried really hard to socialize it, coming to meetings, involving as many folks as we can. But also on the top-down side, we're very lucky at the beginning of this to have Jonathan Woodson as our Assistant Secretary of Defense, who's a academic vascular surgeon and Brigadier General in the Reserves, really buy into this and push some wind behind it. And we got leadership to buy in. So now this is the metric that we are managing our military health system with. This is a memorandum from the civilian in charge of, who's the Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness. The military health system falls under that. And he says, you will maintain your KSAs. You will maintain them. If we can do it at the MTF, our hospital's great. If we can't, we'll do it in partnerships. And those are some quotes from some of the general surgeons and other community members that have been out there that have seen this approach. So what are the next steps? And this is all about persistence. We're, honestly, we're almost just getting started rather than being done. So we're going to stand up an office to manage this within our enterprise. We're going to start, we need to link what happens in the expeditionary environment, the cases that are done downrange via the JTS. We're moving out to not just do this in general and orthopedic surgery with the metrics, but to emergency medicine critical care. We're finalizing a metric for anesthesia. As I mentioned, we're beta testing the knowledge assessment. We're going to start assessment development for those other specialties. And then we've worked with the trauma surgery community to really find a metric that measures the full scope of trauma practice, operative, critical care, and systems. And that will help us with our selections of our partnerships for trauma training platforms and inform those tier four experiences, trauma engagement for the other surgical specialties, including general surgeons. And this is part of a construct that basically defines currency as the base of what we do in the military. There's other elements that are military specific, like having to wear your body armor, knowing the environment with respect to chemical biological weapons, and team training, but this individual currency is kind of the center of the stage. Thank you very much.